Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 133. It's March 24th, 2024. And our guest today is, among other things, he's a sports analyst and an announcer and been around Beckley a long time, Mr. Maris Lowry. Welcome, Maris.
Wayne, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood. I mean, I know you're dad and was involved in boxing for many years. And tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Well, you know, my dad was a professional boxer, and he also had a business here in Beckley, one of the oldest businesses in Raleigh County. My brother runs it now on City Avenue, Lowry's Boots and Shoes. It opened in 1928. My grandfather started it and then passed on to my father. And then, you know, I worked there for a period of time. And as I mentioned, my brother has it now. But my childhood was brought up around sports. Like I said, my dad was a professional boxer. He eventually became the state boxing commissioner. My brother Matt was a Golden Glove champion. I was around a lot of different athletes growing up. My oldest brother Mark, who since passed away, he was a sports editor at the Register Herald back in the 70s. So my whole time growing up as a kid was always evolved around sports. I was fortunate enough when I was 12 years old in 1974 to go to the All-Star Game, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh. But the first baseball game I ever saw was in 1972, the Atlanta Braves and the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Roberto Clemente was playing for the Pirates and Hank Aaron was playing for the Braves. I was 10 years old in 1972. My uncle lived in Pittsburgh, and then I got to see the Big Red Machine, the Reds, a couple of days later. But like I said, that was in 72, 74. I've been to the All-Star Game. So I grew up around sports the whole time. And of course, the business, Lowry's, you know, that we had on City Avenue where we got into the sporting goods. That's how I knew a lot of different people through the Little Leagues, midget football growing up. So I've been involved with it. And then as I got into being an adult, when I went to Concord, I was a PE major. So I've been involved in sports my entire life.
Well, I was going to ask you about Mark. I wasn't sure he was your brother. I remember when he was a sports editor, and you say he's passed
away. Yeah, he passed away in 1996.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Now, you did box a little bit.
Well, I kid everybody. Actually, Matt was the boxer in our family. I told everybody I was too handsome to fight. I didn't want to get hit. But no, actually, Bob
Bolin. In 1974,
yeah,
you and Bob Bolin.
Bob Bolin, actually, Bob Bolin, who works with me at video production, and Bob and I grew up, we fought an exhibition at the YMCA. That is correct. We were both 12 years old. That is correct.
Who won that fight?
Well, it was an exhibition. Of course, I'll say I did. Bob will say he did. How's that? I'll just let it go at that.
Yeah, I think that same night, Matt
TKO, he fought Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett.
And you may remember Tony Bennett. I'm not sure if he was a student of yours. I think Matt might have been. I don't know if that was before you, but they both went to Park in the 70s. And Matt TKO Tony Bennett that night.
when your dad. I used to follow boxing. Man, I was a huge fan when they had the Golden Gloves at the Rec Building, and then they moved to the Armory. And your dad and John Tanner and Doug Epling and Bob Bolin, I mean, they all served different offices in the boxing commission, I guess. And it was a big deal. And then it started dying down some. The amateur boxing, and then along comes the Tough Man contest, and they just drew crowds from everywhere. But I love any kind of fight they had over at the Armory, I would go see. And you had Bobby Klein and Junior Varney and some of the professionals, but they started having some shows and they'd have 10 fights scheduled, and half the guys wouldn't show up. Some of them blamed John Tanner for it. You know, they didn't know anything about it. And then he said they told him they was coming. They didn't show, but I don't know exactly what year that was. It started dying.
Well, I can tell you this. Back in the day, and all those, I can remember all these great fighters, Mickey Udy, Benny Toler. Of course, they've both since passed away. Don Carter, you know, all those great fighters, Tim Gibson, Kerry Lee Hatfield, all of them pretty much trained. Kerry Lee Hatfield didn't, but the rest of them, Kerry Lee Hatfield was from Del Barton. And Kerry Lee Hatfield in 1975 was the national runner-up in the light heavyweight division for the Nationals. But anyway, all those other fighters trained on City Avenue where I currently live today. And I grew up around that. In fact, Rocky Marciano came to our house when I was about 6 years old, and he was a guest referee at the Beckley Golden Gloves at the Armory right before he was killed in a plane crash, right, like 1969. I'd have been seven. Also, Angelo Dundee was at our house. Jimmy Ellis fought in Beckley, and I don't know if people remember Jimmy Ellis, but he fought Joe Frazier in 1970. I know you will, but I don't know how many of our younger listeners would know Jimmy Ellis. But Jimmy Ellis was in the same stable as Muhammad Ali. Of course, Angelo Dundee trained Muhammad Ali. Angelo Dundee ate at our house, and I was around all of that. So I was around all those fighters forever growing up. They all trained there. And of course, and I know you'll remember this, in 1975, Frank Hartenstein and Scott Morris fought each other, and they were teammates of the Beckley football team and good friends. And I remember that Frank Hartenstein trained at the Y and my dad trained Scott Morris. In fact, the water lines in my mom's house, Scott Morris put in 1975. So it's just amazing of the relationships of people that I've known growing up, of all those fighters and athletes that were there, you know, where I live today. In fact, we have a basketball court that my mom and dad put in 1970. The pole that they originally put in is still there, the original pole, and there's a goal still there, the original one from 1970. And we used to have a boxing ring in a gym, and the fighters from Oceania, like I said, Tim Gibson fought in the National Golden Glove tournament a couple times, and unfortunately, you know, Mickey Udy was killed tragically, but I thought Mickey Udy really had a chance to be a part of the 1976 Olympic boxing team. And that was that's probably the best ever Olympic team. That was with Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, John Tate was a part of that, who fought Don Carter and Beckley. So I was around all of those at a very young age, around all these professional, you know, well, it turned out to be professional athletes. Some of them did, but still a lot of really good athletes, and not just boxers, but they did other sports as well.
Your brother, Myron, he was quite a basketball player.
He is currently a head coach. He's been a head coach for 30 plus years. He retired from North Carolina. He lives in Fort Mill, South Carolina. He has two daughters. My two nieces go to Clemson, and now he's coaching at Fort Mill High School in Fort Mill, South Carolina.
I see. Now, how did he end up at Shady?
Well, you see, my grandmother's from Shady. And see, that's where I ended up. So my three older siblings, Mark, Maurice, and Matt, ended up going to Woodrow. And then in 1978, right there, my grandmother, that's where my family's from. In fact, my uncle, Ray Richmond, Ray was a really good basketball player. And he missed what would have been the game-winning shot that could have beat Beckley in the 50s. Ray was a really good player, and he's still around. He lives over in Glade Springs. But my grandmother, my mom was from there, and that's how we ended up moving. Mm-hmm. We ended up moving right there in 1978.
Well, tell us a little bit about your mom. You had all these sports. Your dad was devoting time in the evenings and weekends, and so she had a lot of responsibility taking care of the kids.
And you know, my mom's a big sports fan too. She loves her Atlanta Braves, watches her baseball. My mom will be 89 in August. Wow. She's still getting along pretty good. She doesn't hear as good as she used to, but my mom been around sports for a long time. And you know, my mom enjoyed cooking for all those boxers that used to come and train. And you know, by having a basketball court growing up in the 70s, we were kind of like the park there on City Avenue. Everybody came to play basketball there. My mom enjoyed that because we had all the kids there. You know, all the parents knew where their kids were. They were all there playing pickup basketball on City Avenue at, you know, at the Lowry. So there's a lot of, like, you know, Bruce Martin played there, Tim Hanshaw. There are many, many talented players that played on that basketball court on City Avenue.
You played sports.
I played a little bit. I think I was decent. I mean, and in fact, I could still shoot. I tell people, I used to kid Ron Kidd when I was doing Beckley basketball. I used to practice with the Beckley team. And I used to kid Ron Kidd, the current coach, that, you know, because, you know, Beckley basketball was always founded on defense. And I said, I couldn't guard anybody. And I said, I might give up two on one end, but I can shoot. I'll make a three on the other end, and you're still plus one that I would. Like I said, with the liability I am on the defensive end, I'd make up for it on the offensive end. But I used to practice with them when I was a little bit younger, when I was doing their games. Of course, I broadcast their games for 31 years.
Wow. Yeah. You played youth football.
Yeah, I played youth football, basketball. I played a little bit of everything. Like I said, I was a PE major from Concord. And actually, I never taught. I never got my teaching certificate. I went into sales and then went into broadcasting, and it kind of worked out.
Yeah, I can remember you playing for South.
Yeah.
Danny and Joey Colasurto.
See, back then, now they have to combine it Southwest. But if you remember the midget league when I was a kid, and you're a little bit older than me, Wayne, but you remember they had North, South, East, and West.
And Bowling.
At Bowling Edition, five teams in Beckley, and then you had Shady, Coal City, and Sophia, and had eight teams in the league and had plenty of kids. And now I guess maybe loss of population because, I think North and Bowling had to combine, South and West had to combine, and now I think they play like in Wyoming County. I think the league's completely different.
Yeah. Well, back in those days, I played for East Beckley, and we had a lot of kids from Shady Spring that played with us because they didn't have no place else to play. And I would, the one year, my last year, we had Sterling Lewis and several good ball players, from Shady. James Robinson was the coach at that time. But they, I remember hearing one time you recovered two fumbles in a game against.
Yeah. Well, I had my moments. I guess it's like anybody else. I tell people, I guess if you play long enough or you play everything, eventually, you're going to have a nice play here or there. But yeah, I think I was an okay athlete. I wasn't great, but I was okay. I was a good role player for whatever team needed me for whatever the situation. And that's how I guess I wanted to stay connected to the game. Like I said, I was a PE major. I went to Concord and I got sick there in 1988 and I never went back to get my teaching certificate, but I think it worked out because I ended up getting into broadcasting. And
did you play any high school sports?
I did. I played high school football and basketball.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1981. And from Shady High School in 1981.
That was around Bobby Bowling.
Bobby was at Woodrow at the time. Yeah, Bob and I grew up together. I'm about a year older than him. Yeah, I remember, I'm a little older than Steve Kidd. And Stevie and I went to Concord together. Stevie's about a year and a half younger than me. And I was in between Stevie and Ron. I've known all the coaches at Beckley. I'm probably older than most now out there. But Ron's a little older than me, but outside of that, Stevie I knew. And I remember playing at the Y, and Stevie played for East Beckley in football, and I played for South. I can remember all that. So
now you, somewhere along the line, was it high school where you worked at H&M Shoes?
I did. That was a long time ago. Yeah, that was when I was in college right there. Yeah, I had a stint there where I worked at a buddy of mine from Concord at Belk. And then I worked at H&M Shoes, and then I went to work for the family business there, and I started there in 1989. And, I went around and I sold, I competed with my good friend Larry Foster, he had Spartans, we had Lowry's, and I started selling cheerleading shoes and uniforms and, sporting equipment, footwear. And like I said, at that time, too, was when Bill O'Brien hired me to work at WGLS and do Beckley games. So I was kind of doing that at the same time, and a little sales on the side at the radio station, and then it bloomed into where, I started to get into sales at WGLS, and then Bill O'Brien bought the station, and then Bill eventually sold it to the Marriott, and then the Marriott sold it to West Virginia Radio Corporation.
Did you ever think about being a disc jockey?
No, flat out no. I mean, I like all kinds of music, but no, sports has always been my kind of thing. And when I started doing color, I think same way with Bill. I'll tell you how I started. I'll never forget this. When Bill O'Brien would call me and want me to come to work, and I was like, I don't know if that's what I wanted to do in 1989. So 1990, Beckley's playing Oak Hill in football, and Bill said, well, I'll tell you what, you come out to the game, you come on, you go to a pregame meal, you come, you watch, you see how we call the game, and see if this is something that you want to do. So Beckley's playing Oak Hill over at Van Meter Stadium at that time.
Oh, this was when Oak Hill was tough.
This would have been 1990.
Yeah. This, when I started, 1990.
This is 1990. All right. So go over there and Kyle Lilly was Bill's color man at the time. Now, Kyle may have passed away. I'm not sure if he did. But Kyle, for whatever reason, he didn't show his quarter. They go on the air at 7 o'clock. At this time, games were on 560 WGLS AM. So they had the news at the top of the hour at 7, and we came on at 7:05. So at 6:45, Kyle isn't there. 7 o'clock, Kyle isn't there, and the news is on. And at 7:05, when Bill hits the air, he turns on the mic, puts the headsets on me, and I sit down. I had no preparation, had nothing in front of me. That's how I started my radio career.
Wow.
Was Beckley and Oak Hill. And here's the, and I remember that was my first football game. Then that same year, my first basketball game was in the WGLS tournament. It was Beckley and Mullins. And then when I retired in 2021, it's odd, Wayne, that my first football game that I did was Beckley and Oak Hill. And the last football game I did was Beckley and Oak Hill, was at Oak Hill. And the last basketball game I did was when Beckley won the Colt Regional against South Charleston in May of 21. Then I retired from the radio station, and then I've been working, my part-time gig is with video productions now. I'm doing games on television.
Now, you, what kind of music did you listen to back in high school?
I listened a little bit of everything. I'm more of a classic rock. And matters of fact, I just came back. I went to a concert last Friday, REO Speedwagon, Rick Springfield. So I'm more of a classic rock guy.
How many original people they have?
Of course, Rick Springfield, you know, he's 74 years old and still kicking fine. And REO's pretty much have a lot of people been with him 35, 40 years. I mean, they may not have the originals from the 70s, but Kevin Cronin, he's 73, and, you know, he's still going fine, and they still can. And I saw the Rolling Stones in 2015, you know, with Mick Jagger and all that. So, I mean, these guys, I think that's what keeps them young, and that's what I tell people. Like I'll be 62 in August, and I'm like, by doing these games, that's what keeps me young. And that's what, you know, and I think same way for the guys that does the classic rock, you know, or any rock, or any kind of music, that they get out and they can perform and travel the way they do. I think that's what keeps them going to do, you know, do what they love.
Sure. I think Springfield was down at the Regatta.
He was. I saw it there free. Right. You know, I remember him when he was Dr. Noah Drake in General Hospital when I was in high school in 1980. Remember, he played on General Hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we went this past year and Cool and the Gang was there, and
I saw them.
Cool, yes. 74.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
He's staying with them. But
right.
You started working with Bill, and what was a typical, say you're going to Parkersburg South,
okay,
what's a typical day? I mean, how do you?
Well, at that time when I was working with Bill, and I was doing color, Bill did play-by-play for football and basketball, and I did color. And a typical day would be, We'd leave early and go eat. And Colombo's is always the spot when we went to Parkersburg, the fine Italian place we always ate. It opened at 4 o'clock. So we would work our normal day until about 2 o'clock. We would leave at 2 o'clock, get to Parkersburg. We would eat at 4 and take our time and get to the stadium. And of course, the homework is done during the week. We would reach out to the team that Beckley was playing, their broadcasters, their coaches, get lineup and kind of have a little bit of background, get stats and stuff to be prepared. So when we hit the air at 7 o'clock, we were prepared to talk about that particular game and the team that Beckley's playing, like if you say in this case, Parkersburg South. And it's odd you mention Parkersburg South because my current partner now, Eric Thomas, when Eric and I, the first game we ever did was Beckley at Parkersburg South in a basketball game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I know some of the guys that like Speedy Bevins and...
No, Speedy saw him at the state tournament a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yes.
Is Wisner still around?
No, he passed away. Bob was a good friend of mine. Bob Wisner was a real good friend of mine, but he passed away a few years back.
Now, they were together for years.
In fact, Bill O'Brien and I were like the second longest running team behind them until they split up. Bill and I worked from 1990 to 2012. And like I said, Bill is the number one all time. Bill had 43 years doing Beckley basketball, number one. I'm second at 31. Fred Persinger Sr. is third at 30. That's the top three in Beckley basketball and football history of broadcasting games.
Oh,
so Bill, myself, and Fred Sr.
We mentioned a tough man contest.
Yeah.
You got involved with that. So you were chief judge.
I was chief judge. Also, I had the best job. I escorted the ring girls into the ring. So I definitely had the best job of all of them. But yes, in fact, I met Jerry Thomas in 1982. My dad was the commissioner. We met Jerry Thomas. He came down to the shoe store. And see, Jerry had a brother, Franco, who won the West Virginia Golden Gloves and went on to the Nationals in like 1978, right there. So I knew them. And of course, Art Dorr started that, who I met Art Dorr. They used to have fights down at Joey's El Cid, if you remember. They used to have fights inside the hotel was, and Art Dorr came down there. But he started it in 1979, and then Jerry Thomas has taken over, and it's been in Beckley every year since 1982.
Oh, so guys like Joe Cook and Joey Herrera and,
right,
and guys like, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, any fight or any of the, when the original Tough Man contest started, it, they were always there involved.
Right. And a lot of guys that fought amateur, like I think Scott Morris fought in the Tough Man contest. Frank Hartenstein fought in the Tough Man contest. A lot of guys who had a great amateur career went on and fought in the Tough Man contest.
Yeah. And Tommy Small.
Tommy Small fought.
He actually started in the Tough Man,
right,
and then started on, box.
Then and went on to become a professional fighter. That's correct.
Did, yeah. And did pretty good there. But you were, among other things, you're on the, or was, on the Hall of Fame committee at Woodrow Wilson High School basketball.
For basketball, that's great. I was the chairman of the Hall of Fame committee. Since I retired, I'm no longer in yeah, that. I mean, if anyone from the school or anyone would want my opinion, I could give it to them. But I tell this, and it's true, from 1990 to 2021, no one has seen more Beckley football and basketball than I have. And that would include, the only person that saw more Beckley basketball in that time would be Ron Kidd, not even Dave Barstow, because he didn't coach that whole time from 90 to 2021. So only Ron Kidd could, I don't think he's seen any more. He might see, he's seen more because he conducted the practices. But as far as games from 1990 to 2021, I've seen as much Beckley basketball as Ron Kidd, because I did every game, and football same way from 1990. Of course, but even before that, when I was younger, back in the 70s, I would go to Beckley basketball games back when Preach Wiseman was the coach, and even football games when Joel Hicks and then Pete Carlocerto was the coach.
Now there's I've been trying to get a petition for, I think I should be in the Woodrow Wilson Basketball Hall of Fame, because I introduced Ryan Colasurto's parents to each other. And somewhere along the line, I ought to get some votes for that.
I'm going to say this, and people can agree to disagree. And I've said this publicly before, so what I'm getting ready to say is no big deal. But I tell people, I know the older guys from Beckley, if they win and when they hear this, or when someone tells them this is what I said, they probably won't like it. I said Ryan Colasurto is the best player ever to play at Beckley Woodrow Wilson High School, but he's the greatest basketball player. And I know, and I met Dwayne Wingler. I met him several times. In fact, my aunt was in the same class as Dwayne Wingler of 1954, and they had this class reunion. And Dwayne Wingler wrote down his name, address, and phone number on a napkin for me to give to Coach Barstow. And by the time I gave it to Coach Barstow, he'd already passed away. And it wasn't that bad long. It was like within a week after I saw him at Dwayne Wingler at this event. But I met him through Bill O'Brien. We had him on and I interviewed him. So I knew him and he knew me well. And I know the older guys tell me that Dwayne Wingler, and I can't maybe really speak to that. So maybe I should say in my time, but I tell people all the time, Ryan Colasurto was the best basketball player that ever played at Beckley Woodrow Wilson High School.
I'm sure there's people that will argue with that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm sure they'll argue, especially the older guys. Yeah. And I said this, and I used to say this, and I broadcast Ryan's entire career, and I would say this. He was the Larry Bird of high school basketball.
Okay.
And like I said, I know there's a lot of older guys that played in the 50s and 60s that might disagree with that. In fact, we had this Hall of Fame meeting, and I said that, and older guys asked me, why do I believe that? And here's the thing. And Ryan Colasurto's entire high school career, Beckley never lost a home game. They never lost a home game. 91, 92, 93, they were runner-up in 91. They were state champions in 92, 93. And I always would say, like, Shea Fleener was like McHale, and Ryan Colasurto was like Bird. And that was a, you know, and I know Coach Barstow would never say, hey, this was my better team. You know, 1990 is still one of the best teams that Beckley ever had. And no, I wasn't around in the 50s, and I know they had some really good teams in the 50s with Dwayne Wingler, and I've heard all kinds of different stories about it, and I met him, and I know, but I should say from my time, from what I can remember from 1970 to current, I'll say Ryan Colasurto, but a lot of people will tell me the older guys will tell me Dwayne Wingler, and there's Beckley had so many great players in the 90s, but I would say Ryan Colasurto was number one.
Yeah, I had Ron in school at Park, and when Bobby was coaching at Park, and I was a football coach, and I actually had Ryan talked into playing football one year, and I said, "Well, go home and ask your dad," and he came back the next day. My dad said, "No way." It was probably a good thing. People got hurt. They would have hung me probably at that time. But along with your job as announcing, you sold ads.
I sold commercials. And I do a little bit of that with video production. And that really gets me in tune with the clients. That's what I still do today. Because, you know, when I retired in 2021, I retired early. And I'm like, well, video production's reached out. And I'm like, part of the thing is my broadcasting, but also... At the time when I started, video production was charging because they didn't have any commercials on. So people had to pay to watch the games. So one of the main things, and Butch Mounts, who I really appreciate to give me the opportunity, that when him and I sit down to talk it over, I said, well, here, if I go out and I put commercial content to help cover the cost, you'll have more people. It would be more intriguing to advertisers because people can watch it for free. And that's what we've done. So because it used to be, I think it was like $10.99 a month. And you're talking about December, January, February, March, you had to pay, you know, and I know that's not a lot, but still, when you have to pay and you have to put your credit card in, you have to go through all that rigmarole on television. I said, it's a lot better free when now you can put it up on any device, on your phone, on Facebook, YouTube, on your computer, on your smart TV, telephone, I mean, on your television rather, and on your phone, of course. I was like, well, I'd go out and I told him I would sell the commercials, and it's great for the advertisers because when it's free, it's amazing how many people watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, if my memory serves me correct, the first year when Independence played Bluefield, the Friday after Thanksgiving, it was a day game. Boy, it was cold that day when Independence beat Bluefield. There was like almost 5,000 people watching that live. And that's amazing for a high school event. So, I mean, that's something that I did. I did it radio and had a background. And of course, I sold sporting goods and I knew the coaches. I've had a sales background for a long, long time. I had a paper route when I was 8 years old. I've sold my whole life. So it worked out and it kind of goes hand in hand of what I do as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I've got ESPN2, ESPN+. I've got Flow Wrestling. I've got Track Wrestling. I've watched more college wrestling in the last 5 years than ever seen in my whole life.
Because it's available to you because of the streaming, right? It's there. And just like what we do at Video Productions. And, you know, we do a little bit. Video Productions does everything. I mean, Butch Mounts, this is a great thing. And people tell us all the time it's the greatest thing ever to happen to high school sports because a lot of people from Beckley or from Raleigh County, because we do not just Beckley, but, you know, in football, we do complete Raleigh County. We did middle school. We did the middle school championships. We do boys. We do girls. So, you know, there's a wide variety of things at which we do that's available for people to watch.
But then you have one argument that people say, well, they're watching it on the screen and they're not paying the
money. Well, I would tell you this, just like anything else, if you're going to go, you're going to go. I don't think, just like going to a Marshall football basketball game or WVU, if you're going to go, you're going to go. You're going to say, no, we're not going to Morgantown this week. We're going to watch it on TV. I just believe that the ones are going to go, you're going to go. And I'll tell you what, when I was at the state tournament for the girls game, and I did 9 games at the state tournament. But the Thursday, I came back from Charleston to Beckley, and Eric and I did the co-regional Beckley and George Washington in the boys for the winter to go to the state tournament. And the place was packed. So, I think there's a lot of things that I could say, like on these Friday night games that we do in football or a lot of these basketball games, that debunks that argument that it hurts the crowd because people are coming to the game, they're coming to the game.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing, and you can't help it, like in basketball season with girls and boys, middle school, basketball, and high school, there's so many games on so many nights that I think that hurts the crowd. And I'm not saying that there's wrong with that because I don't know what the solution would be to fix that. But I'm saying as long as the girls' season and boys' season's at the same time and you have middle school games, usually on Monday and Thursday. But now high school play almost every night, Monday through Saturday. So I think that hurts crowds, especially if you have a cheerleader at one school and a player at another, or you have two kids. You know, if you're a family and you got two kids, one's playing here, one's playing there.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. And you can't go, or they play on the same night. That's what I'm saying. So I think that hurts the crowd more than anything else.
Yeah, you before, you know, when girls basketball first started, it was in the fall.
In the fall, right.
And boys always, the high school usually played on Tuesdays and Fridays.
But now it's nothing like
it's
that.
Anytime you can get a game, get a schedule, because you got to, not only you got to see the availability of the other team, but you got to get referees.
Well, that's it. And that's one thing, too. You know, there's a lot of these veteran officials. I don't know if there's any younger guys to pass the baton to, because you know, and all these games that I do, and I bet I worked 70 basketball games this year, Wayne, from November the 28th up until the state tournament here a couple weeks ago. And that is middle school boys and girls, high school boys and girls, WVU Tech men's and women's. I bet I worked 70 games, and I saw a lot of the same officials, the same group of officials almost all the time, because there's not enough officials to go around.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, this past football season, I'd go up to Woodrow had a home game. I would go up and watch the first half and then come back home and watch the second half on video productions of Independence, you know.
Well, we appreciate that. And that way you got the best of both worlds. You get to watch a half live and a half on television. So we appreciate that.
And then when Independence got on the roll, which they have been on the last two or three years, you catch all the away games. And I mean, it's something else.
Well, here's what I will tell you. And I will tell you this because it was told to me. Current Independence coach John Lilly said that Atticus Goodson, as good as he was, and Judah Price, and more so, I think, with Atticus Goodson, but John Lilly told me this. He won the Kennedy Award because of video productions, because people got to see him in other parts of the state. And when you want to know the benefits, I can say so many more benefits, but that's one. People just didn't see a stat line of what he rushed for or how many touchdowns he scored. They actually got to see him play by, if not live, all the games are still on replay. In other words, when the games were over, basketball or whether it be football Friday night, by the time the kids get home, the game's up and they can watch the whole game replay and they can watch it as many times. And coaches scout that way. But anyway, John Lilly told me that. And he said he really appreciated video productions because he said Atticus Goodson, the people up north, he may not have gotten the votes that he got to get the Kennedy Award, as good as he was, and in my opinion, deserved the Kennedy Award, but they had to watch him on video productions so he could, and that's what helped him get the Kennedy Award.
Now, when you went from radio to video productions, that's a whole different kind of broadcast.
It's a whole different.
Because radio,
yes.
You're trying to develop, yes, a picture for them.
Well, here's what I do a whole lot less, and you can do less. Radio, you got to paint the picture. You know, time and score, like where the ball is in football, where the ball is, time and score, basketball, everything. And now that I've gone to video productions, and I think I've adapted to this well, I don't have to give the time because you can see it. I don't have to give the score because you can see it. And I don't have to be as descriptive. I can just let it play out. And it's been much easier. And I think I have adapted it well, translating from radio to television.
Do you do baseball?
I do. I do softball. In fact, this year, for the fourth year, I'll be doing the girls state softball tournament. I do baseball, but it's amazing. Girls softball is way more popular than baseball. And actually, to even go back even further, when I was at Concord, I had a buddy of mine that did games for the Princeton Pirates. That's kind of how I got started in broadcasting. I did color for the Princeton Pirates there for about a half a season, like in 1988. That's why Bill O'Brien reached out to me for me to come on board at JLS. So I tell everybody, I'm a man for all seasons. People say, what's my favorite sport? Whatever I'm doing at the time. That's my favorite sport. The one thing I've never done, and video productions covered the state wrestling tournament. I've never been involved in wrestling. I don't really know much about it. I don't know how you score it. I know when a guy gets pinned, that I know, but video productions cover that, and they cover all the state tournaments of everything, you know, so that's one thing that I haven't done.
Now, when they cover the state tournament, do people have to pay for the...
They do. That's through the... Some of these state tournaments, they do. The National High School Federation, like on basketball, that's not... They have to pay, but it's a heck of a deal. You pay like $12 and you get every game. $12, or you can pay a $65 subscription to the National High School Federation, and that will get you every high school championship in all 50 states. But as far as, I don't know if they had to pay for wrestling, swimming, that I don't know. Girls and boys basketball, they do. Volleyball, I don't think so. Baseball is a joint venture with Metro News. Softball, I don't think they have to pay for that.
You mentioned Ryan Colasurto as the best basketball player Woodrow's had in your time. Who's the best basketball player, high school basketball player that you've seen live?
Ever? Randy Moss.
Really?
Best athlete I've been around. Actually, I took. I'll tell you this. Many people, you may or may not know this, and I'm me and Gene. I took Randy Moss and Gene Neighbors to the Nike camp in the '90s, and that's the top 150 high school players in the country, and by invitation only. And I'll never forget that when Coach Barksdale called me about, because Randy Moss was in, and Coach Barksdale told me if I possibly could, if I knew people at Nike, that I could help get Gene Neighbors in. But of course, Gene Neighbors was well-deserving to be in. He was one of the top 150 players in the country. So me and Randy Moss and Gene Neighbors and Kevin Garnett and Melvin Whitaker, you may, that's a name you would have known. Melvin Whitaker was 6'11", and he was from Raleigh, North Carolina, but he got recruited by Virginia. But he got in trouble. He never ended up playing. But anyway, we went to the Nike camp, and Randy Moss was amazing. And they said he was the best basketball player at that camp. We're talking about there's a lot of future NBA guys in there. And I seen Randy Moss dunk on Kevin Garnett. So people knew he was going to go play football. The next year, and congratulations to Corny Jackson, become the new Marshall coach. I took Corny Jackson and Joe DeBurgess to the Nike camp at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis. And Corny Jackson just got named Marshall's new men's basketball coach last night. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah.
So me and Corny go way back. In fact, when we landed in Indianapolis, we were going to the hotel. He was recruited in the backseat of a cab. Didn't have Ubers back then. And he was recruited by Tennessee by players because there was a kid named J.C. Black, another really good kid that played at Tennessee that already had committed to Tennessee. And Corny was going to be on their team at this Nike camp, and that's how they recruited Corny Jackson to Tennessee, and it was a better fit for him to go to Marshall. But like Gene Neighbors, that's how Gene ended up getting recruited by LSU.
Yeah,
and you know, and it was funny. Here's another thing that even Gene Neighbors will tell you this: when he first got there, when they put him down into teams, and I was there to chaperone with Gene and Randy Moss, and they were on separate teams at the Nike camp, and we're at the Chicago Bulls training facility in Deerfield, Illinois, and the coach of Gene's team was Coach Lowry. I thought that was funny. Good coach from South Carolina. But there was Jermaine O'Neal. There were a lot of NBA players. I mean, you know, you're talking about the top 150 high school players in the country, and about 60 of them probably played in the NBA. And I was right there, and I met every Division I coach I was able. I was around all these top coaches at the time. That would have been in the 90s. That was when Gene Neighbors and Randy Moss were going into their senior year. So, but I'll also say this. Bimbo Coles was awesome. Obviously, you know, went on to Virginia Tech and then, you know, Olympic team into the NBA. And even Herbie Brooks. And good friends with Herbie still today. And I'm amazed that Herbie's record still stands at the state tournament. With the three-point line and O.J. Mayo playing in it and all these other great players, especially the way they shoot the three today. I'm surprised that – and I was there when Herbie did that back in 1983. And it's amazing that it is held to the test of time. Here we are 41 years later, and the record is still intact.
I always said if they had a three-point shot when Bane Surratt played at Beckley in 62, he would have probably averaged 45 points a game.
Yeah, you know, and you're talking about, of course, that was the year I was born. And you know, they found a footage of Bill O'Brien calling that 1962 state championship game. But what's amazing then, you know, of course, even in my time through the 70s, 80s, you could never even think about a three-point line, let alone in the 60s. If somebody would have said, hey, what if you had a three-point line? You know what I mean? As crazy as that seems. But now, if you, as much as basketball as I watch on every level, people really fall in love with that three-point shot.
Randy Moss, when he played football for DuPont, I was scouting for Woodrow. So I would always be on the road. Woodrow would have a home game. And the game that I watched 3 years that DuPont was playing South Charleston, and Randy Moss was South Charleston had a real good program at that time. They'd won a state championship. I think Acasto was the coach, but they'd have 60 guys that were unbelievable ball players. And but Moss did everything. He punted. He returned punts. He returned kickoffs. He threw passes. I mean, he was the best football player.
I can remember, Wayne, that in my early years, early 90s, Beckley's playing DuPont. And I had not heard of Randy Moss. The first time I'd ever heard of Randy Moss, he might have been a sophomore. Beckley is playing DuPont. And Beckley punts the ball to Randy Moss. And after he made this electrifying move and he ran about a 90-yard punt return for a touchdown. And Bill O'Brien will tell you, anybody's ever worked with me, when people say, well, this guy's going to be a great player. I looked at Bill. I remember we went to a commercial break after the touchdown. I said, Bill, that guy's going to play in the NFL. And that's the only player I've ever said that. I've never said that guy's going to play in the NBA or that guy's going to play. And then I remember we used to do baseball games for Beckley. And I got to go to Cooperstown twice to cover Beckley baseball. But I remember Beckley was playing DuPont and watched Randy Moss in the 90s. And he hit a grand slam home run at Beckley. The ball's still going. But he was amazing. And as good as like Doug Ligursky was, who played in the NFL, because he played in the trenches, it's hard in high school to say, you know, that lineman's going to go to the NFL. I don't know if anybody knew. I mean, I knew Doug Ligursky was a really good lineman, but I didn't know he was good enough to go to the NFL. I don't think anybody could say when he was a sophomore in high school, he's going to play in the NFL. Or when other guys, or like Van Horn had a shot, you know, when he went to the NFL. When you watched them in high school, you knew they were big, you knew they were strong, you knew they were talented. But I don't think even the coaches at that time, Coach Lilly, who was Coach Woodrow at that time, or any of their line coaches, Coach Stafford, or whoever that may have been at that time, could say, man, that kid's going to play in the NFL. But the first time I saw Randy Moss, that guy's going to play in the NFL. And I think, to me, that's what puts him aside. Even as good as Bimbo Coles was, I never thought, I was like, could he play in it? Maybe he's going to play college basketball. But I know he's going to play in the Olympic team. I don't think a lot of people knew that. But the first time I ever saw Randy Moss, I knew that he was going to play in the NFL. And I felt that way about Kurt Warner. And that's another other athlete, Kurt Warner, that played at Pima, went on to Penn State. And I was 12, 13 years old at the time. He's another one. And I would say he might be the second best, because when I watched him play, I'm like, that guy's going to play professional. And those are the only two players I could ever recall saying when the first time I saw them, they're going to play professional, in which they both did. And you could make a case that Kurt Warner maybe belongs in the Hall of Fame in the NFL. But I'm just saying, there's just nobody else that I have seen, that I personally seen. And of course, I wasn't broadcasting Kurt Warner games, but I did many games in which Randy Moss played. And by the way, I remember a game that they had Beckley by 17, and Ryan Crotalcerto led Beckley back and took the game to overtime and ended up beating him. I told you, Ryan Crotalcerto and Beckley, they never lost a home game in his tenure. So,
wow. Randy Moss, Bobby Howard
always went to play at Notre Dame.
Water down at DuPont. Yeah. Jason Williams playing basketball.
And I will tell you this, Coach Bardsdale, when he was running the summer league, talking about the shoe store, we did all the trophies for the Knights of Columbus. Coach Bardsdale would buy his trophies from me, and my brother Matt did the engraving. We put the order down, and every like when they got into tournament play, and I'll never forget this. And I tell this people all the time, because that great battle that Beckley and DuPont had, in fact, this was the 30th anniversary of Beckley and DuPont from 1994. And Gene Abers had a fabulous game and you know, Jason Williams and Coach Bardsdale. And I don't even know if he would remember this. I remember he came in the shoe store when he was ordering trophies, and he said, Maris, I'll tell you, Jason Williams is going to play in the NBA. I remember Coach Bardsdale telling me that, and I told people that. And people kind of looked at me like I said, you know, I wouldn't know. But if Coach Bardsdale tells me that he thinks Jason Williams is going to play in the NBA, and of course he had a nice NBA career. And I also thought maybe Brett Nelson. I don't know if you remember Brett Nelson that played for St. Albans. He played against Beckley. Brett Nelson. I thought maybe, I don't think he ever made it to the NBA, but when I say that, I mean he was a great player. I thought perhaps he could make the NBA. Yeah. But the only two players that I ever watched, no one ever went in my broadcasting time, of course Kurt Warner was before, as I mentioned, but Randy Moss was the only player that in my entire 30 plus years, when I watched him the first time, I said, that guy's going to play in the NFL.
You just got done with the state tournaments. What do you think about the four classes in West Virginia?
I'm not a fan of it, but it is what it is. And like this fall, when they go to four classes in like say football, there's going to be 25 4A schools, and 16 is going to make the playoffs. And last year, when they had 34 4A teams, they had Beckley, which finished 5-5, Musselman finished 4-6 and made it. You're going to have teams under 500. I've always thought West Virginia was really too small to have four classes. But I guess there's people much higher up on the food chain, smarter than me, that you know, I guess they've done the research. They know what they need to know. But I mean, as a broadcaster, I try not to really get involved in that. My job is just call the game.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell people all the time, I don't make the news. I just report it. So, you know, but, you know, it's here. It's here to stay. Just like people want to fuss and complain about the transfer rule, you know. You know, we didn't grow up with that, and we'd like to see maybe, hey, this is where you live, this is where you play. But I stay out of that conversation too. My job is, listen, you give me the roster, this is your team, this other team. My job's call the game. That's
sure.
what I did.
Sure. Now you're involved with Beckley Babe Ruth now.
I am now.
I know Doug Lieber and his brother Jeff. They along with Coach Barksdale, they got the and a ton of great volunteers. They got things going again. Babe Ruth had kind of dwindled down to almost nothing, and in the last two or three years, they've had all-star teams that have been very successful. The field is in a lot better conditions, but Doug had, because of job responsibilities, had to vacate the presidency, and you know you're taking
well,
over.
Well, I'll tell you how that happened. The first basketball game that Eric and I did for the 2023-2024 season was right after Thanksgiving. A regular season game, a girls game, Beckley's playing Princeton. And that's the earliest I think they'd ever played before December. It was November 28th to be exact. And the Beckley boys team was just finishing up practice prior, you know, because Beckley girls play over at the gym at Woodrow. Coach Barksdale came up to me and he put his arm around me and he's like, I got to ask you something. He's like, we need somebody to be the president of Beckley Babe Ruth. Would you consider doing it? And my first initial is like, wow, that Coach Barksdale, if you feel that, if you have enough confidence in me that you think that I'm the right person for the job, I said, I'll get back to you. I'll thank it over. And we went to lunch one day and I told him I would do it. And him and I, and Doug Lieber, like I said, I've got so many good people to follow back on. Larry Foster's our groundskeeper. I've got so many people to follow back. I was like, they gave me the keys to the Cadillac. Like, I just can't run it in the ditch. I've got so many people to help me keep it going. The league is growing. One thing Babe Ruth has done on a national level, they've expanded it from 13 to 15 years old to 13 to 16. Now, when I first heard that, I thought, well, I'm not a real big fan of that because you got a 16-year-old kid pitching against a 13-year-old kid. But the league has grown and they have seven teams. We possibly could have an eighth team. So we're doing signups right now. And I had so much of this basketball to do that I really couldn't dive into baseball with all this basketball on my plate. So I've kind of switched gears, but I've had so much help. And, you know, we're going to have a board meeting on Wednesday of this week, which is tomorrow. And so I've got so much other help to help people. Even though I'm the president, I've got so many people there to help me. And I haven't been to a Beckley Babe Ruth game probably in 15 years, probably. So it's going to be kind of a little different and new to me, but I love baseball. Named after Roger Maris, the baseball player. And I told you, I started my broadcasting in baseball. Went to Cooperstown twice when Mark Daniel was the baseball coach at Beckley. Got to broadcast there twice. Wow. Got to go to the Hall of Fame. So, you know, I have a sports background in general. So I thought as being retired, and also still working with video productions, and they know that video productions is still my first commitment of what I have to do, because there will be some girls softball, maybe some baseball, and I'll be doing the girls state softball tournament there in the middle of May, and that's when we get started playing. But I have other people that can help, that I can rely on, that can kind of help me through the process.
Are you going to be able to, is Babe Ruth going to work with the middle school league that they have at Appalachian?
Well, I don't know that they still have the middle school league, but yeah, Babe Ruth will work. Because here's the thing, too, and just talking to some high school coaches, of course, no player at Babe Ruth will play until their high school season's over.
Sure.
So, you know, the thing is that I believe that there's nobody going to walk off of the mound at Babe Ruth or from the plate that's going to go walk right into the big leagues. It's a developing league, and want to make your kid the best player that we can make them. And we want to work with anybody and everybody to make the league as good and competitive as we can. You know, I was aware and kind of kept up with it because I did the state little league baseball tournament on video productions. And when I was doing that in Bridgeport, I know that the Babe Ruth teams were in Wisconsin, and there's another team played maybe in Kentucky. I know they had two teams that went to the Babe Ruth World Series. So there's some young talent that play at Babe Ruth, and I just want to see that continue to flourish and be able to have the league grow and make it as good a league as we can.
But nationally, Babe Ruth has dropped. There's Cal Ripken legs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's been the number of teams in Babe Ruth nationally have dropped down. I'm not saying it's not a big deal to go to the World Series or anything, but I don't think it's quite as tough or rigid as it used to be.
That's probably, so there's another thing too, Wayne. It's not just with baseball. This is with basketball. We have this travel ball at AAU. You have all this. And you know, I can speak to this more on the basketball level because how much more involved I've been with basketball over the years than I have baseball. But these AAU tournaments in the summer and spring, their AAU coaches on a lot of these high school kids have more influence where these kids are going to go to college than their actual high school coach. And now that you have the NIL at college, their high school coach probably has even less. They probably didn't have as much before it was AAU. The high school coach probably has less and less control, or not really, maybe control is not a good word, or maybe influence or guidance. Maybe that's the word of where a kid should go to play college. You know, it used to be you lean on your high school coach. If you're going to recruit, like if I was going to recruit one of your, if you were coaching high school basketball and I was a college coach and I want to recruit one of your kids, you would be the guy that I'd want to talk to. But now more or less it's talking to the AAU coach. And now what kind of NIL deal, depending on the level of how high, you know, what division or what school that, that particular kids, you know, is going to.
Yeah. What do you, I just got back from a baseball trip. We went to Florida last week and watched the last week of spring training. And been going down the last 4 years. And my favorite team is the Cincinnati Reds, of course, if you grew up around here, and also the Washington Nationals. And you mentioned the first time you ever saw a professional baseball game. My first baseball game was Cleveland Indians and the Washington Senators. And I became at Washington. I became a Washington fan until they shut the Senators down. And then when they started back up in 2003 or whenever, the Nationals, I've followed them. And they've won one World Series,
right,
but I don't know whether they'll win another one. But.
Well, you know, one thing, it's odd that you mentioned Cleveland, because I can also tell you about 1972. I mentioned that I saw the Pirates and the Braves, and then I saw the Pirates and the Reds. In 1972, I also saw the Milwaukee Brewers when they were in the American League against the Cleveland Indians. And they played the old Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, which at that time, well, of course, it doesn't stand. It's not even in existence anymore. They tore it down. But it seated 80,000 people. And this was in August, and it was a doubleheader, and they don't play doubleheaders anymore. And, you know, Buddy Bill was playing third base for Cleveland, and Oscar Gamble played for Cleveland. And, you know, George Cooper played for Milwaukee. And there was about 30,000 people there in an 80,000-seat stadium. And it looked like nobody was there. And I, you know, I got to see that. But, you know, I grew up as a Cincinnati Red fan, and WGLS used to cover Cincinnati Red games.
Oh,
and I don't know if you know this,
sleep,
but when I grew up, and probably when you grew up, you know who the play-by-play guy of the Reds was before Marty Brenneman, right?
Oh, yeah.
Al Michaels.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Al Michaels was the play-by-play guy before Marty Brenneman. Marty Brenneman took over in 73, but Al Michaels, 69, 70, 71, and 72 was Al Michaels.
Well, Nell Nuxall was the...
Well, he was a caller, but Al Michaels was the play-by-play guy there. And I don't know if you probably remember this. There was a team called the Seattle Pilots back in 1969.
I see.
If you remember that, they moved to Milwaukee to become the Brewers.
Now, I took a group of wrestlers in it would have been in the early 80s, maybe around 80, I guess. And it might have been 79. I can't remember. But it was when Pittsburgh had the We Are Family.
1979, yeah.
79. And I took a group of wrestlers to a camp up in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And we were only about an hour from Pittsburgh. And so one night after the camp, I said, well, none of those kids had ever been to a baseball game. I said, we're going to go watch the Pirates. Pirates were playing San Diego. So we leave early and we get there. Well, I thought, you know, we'll watch some batting practice, might get a foul ball or something, you know. And so when we get there, the players are coming in. And I tell you what, Willie Stargell and those guys were the nicest people. Yep. I mean, they shook hands with all the kids and pictures or whatever. And I mean, I wasn't really a Pittsburgh fan, but I became one immediately. You know, yep. Of course, I always liked Clemente, but those guys were something else. That was a special group.
Well, I'm going to opening day of the Pirates this season on Friday, April the 5th. They play the Baltimore Orioles at 4:12, and the reason they start the game at 4:12, that's the area code of Pittsburgh. So they're starting the game at 4:12, and I'm going to that game. And the next day, if the weather's good, I'll go to the Saturday game. Because I sit out in spitting snow to watch the Yankees and the Pirates play two games. I went two separate nights, and it was too darn cold. And I said, I'm getting too old for that. I don't want to watch baseball in the freezing weather. But I'll bear it for opening day, but I'm going to, if the weather doesn't cooperate, then I'll go to the hockey game. But I will tell you this, last year, and each of the last two seasons, I've been to the Notre Dame Blue Gold game. And last year, I went to Wrigley Field. I've been to Wrigley a couple different times. Actually, I've been to Wrigley four times. But I almost saw a perfect game last year against the Dodgers. And they had this little dribbler down third base. And at least it could have been called an error. The catcher got in the way of the third baseman. And that's the only hit the Dodgers got. The Cubs won that day. And a beautiful day in Wrigley Field. So I would highly recommend, if you've never been to Wrigley Field, you should go.
I always wanted to go to Wrigley Field and Fenway Park.
I've been to both of them. Yeah. In fact, I still have a ticket stub from 1978, a $2 ticket to sit in the outfield for the in Fenway Park. Wow. But I've been to Fenway Park a half a dozen times, and I've been to Wrigley four times.
Yeah, well, that's still on my bucket list. Speaking of bucket list, where do you see Maris Lowry? And what's on your bucket list?
What's on my bucket list? Well, I've been very fortunate. I have been to the Final Four. I have been to the League Championship Series. I have been to numerous bowl games. I've been fortunate enough to broadcast. In fact, I don't know if you remember, Beckley went down to Atlanta at the Omni and played before an NBA game. I've met numerous professional players. I've been very, very fortunate. I've been able to have my health. Thank the good Lord for that. I don't know. I've been to iconic Boston Garden. I've met Larry Bird. I've met Dave Cowens, Bill Russell, John Havlicek. I've been to Notre Dame Stadium multiple times. In fact, I even went to the Notre Dame Marshall game, but we won't talk about that. I've been very, very fortunate. I don't know that I have really anything left on my bucket list. I've been to St. Louis. I've been to the Arch. Been to Grand Canyon. Been to Vegas. Been to San Francisco. Been to L.A. I've been very fortunate. At one time, I thought I wanted to go overseas. Now, with the way the world is now, I'm not sure I want to do that. Uh-huh. But I have been very, very fortunate. And if I would die tomorrow, I think I lived a really good life. And hopefully the good Lord will let me live until I'm 150 years old. And I don't know. We'll see what's next. I don't know. But up to now, I've been very, very fortunate. Been able to do what I love, to go to these iconic sporting events and iconic arenas and stadiums. And so I don't know that there's one thing I could say right now that would be on my bucket list. Maybe if we have a backup to this, if we have a part two to this, I'll think about it. Maybe I'll have something for you.
That was another question I had. you've been a joy to listen to all these years, and I've enjoyed you and Bill, and I've enjoyed listening to you and Eric and watching ball games. And I hope you keep it up as long as you can. But you got to promise me you're going to come back, because we're not finished. We got more to talk.
Well, I can. That's one thing. For people that know me, they know I can sit here and talk forever. So if you'll have me back, I'd sure love to come back.
Glad to have you. And anybody else out there that would like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. This is Wayne Bennett. God bless you.
They say you got a boyfriend. You're up late every weekend. They're talking about you and it's bringing me down. But I know the neighborhood. They talk is cheap when the story is good. And the tales grow. make it.